Welcome to the audio podcast of The Table,
a new United Methodist community of faith taking shape at Central UMC in Sacramento, California.
The podcast currently features the messages of Matt Smith and Linda Duhirsu,
with a musical introduction by Anthony Coleman, our director of music.
Thanks for listening.
From the lectionary readings, which is a three-year cycle of suggested readings for the church. And it's coming to you from the Old Testament prophet Micah. We're reading from chapter 5, verses 2 through 5. But you, O Bethlehem of Ephrathah, who are one of the little clans of Judah, from you shall come forth for me one who is to rule in Israel, whose origin is from of old, from ancient days. Therefore, he shall give them up until the time when she who is in labor has brought forth. Then the rest of his kindred shall return to the people of Israel, and he shall stand and feed his flock in the strength of the Lord, and the majesty of the name of the Lord his God. And they shall live secure, for now he shall be great to the ends of the earth, and he shall be the one of peace.
Come the long expected Jesus, born to set thy people free from our fears and sins, release us, let us find our rest in thee, Israel's strength.
Book called Legacies, and it was written by a woman named Betty Lord, and in it she tells the story of a businessman, a Chinese businessman, who was imprisoned in his own office for many years during the persecution of China's great cultural revolution some years back. He was able, in that prison of his own office, to persevere because every day he could look out between, there were little slats of between the wood that had been nailed over all of the office windows in his office building. He could persevere because every day he could look out through the little slit in the window and see a very small red kite that was flying out there. Not just any kite, but it was a kite that was being flown by his young son. And so he knew, despite his imprisonment, by just a little glimpse each day, that someone was waiting for him. And he said afterwards that he held on to life just as tightly as he knew he had taught his son to hold on, you know, to the string of a kite, which when you're small and it's windy is no little task. Holding on to life and persevering is what was going on in the time of Micah in the scripture that Susan read for us this morning. And Micah was speaking to the people of his day, in his time. And his speeches that are all throughout that book are believed to refer to events in which people needed to hang on. It was a time of great unrest and turmoil for that whole northern kingdom and for Jerusalem because of the domineering strength of the huge Assyrian nation. The people to whom Micah's words were directed had no chance, no power really, to at all match the warring power of those that surrounded them on all sides. And Micah was insisting that the only hope for them was to trust in God, to look through the slats of their life, to hold on and to trust in God's ability and future and remain faithful to God. And Micah's words rage against the social and moral abuses that were going on against the people of the day. We would have to take a whole lot more time than we have this morning to look at that whole book of Micah, to understand it more fully, but I'm just going to condense it this way and say that it's a small book, you know, it's just 7 chapters, but it could be understood as a collection of speeches that contain these prophetic words and oracles of punishment and then salvation. So on the one hand, coming out of Micah, you'll hear, you'll be destroyed, you'll be destroyed, you'll be destroyed, and then you hear, and you'll be saved, and you'll be saved, and you'll be saved. Okay? All of that, the crux of all of that, is a struggle also around land. And it's just important for us today to know that. Because land at the time, and maybe some of us feel the same way today, is vital for those folks, vital for their survival. It's vital for their identity, and it's very critical to them having any kind of a future at all. And if they're to have a future, it means they need to reclaim their place, and the people keep taking their land. Because the land is so vital, the language in this book of Micah is all about protecting land. That's what you're really hearing about, protecting the land from those Assyrians. And the Assyrians, I just want to describe their power a little bit so we're really clear. Those with the power, those Assyrians, they had taken everything away from the poor. They took their land, which meant they took their inheritance, which is why they lost their future. They have evicted all of the widows. Widows had no power, right? They evicted them from their homes. They had fixed all the scales and the measurements and the weights, because that's how commerce was done, right? They fixed all those. So they got all the wealth. They sucked. They were mean. They wielded that power. One writer said they wielded their power like a song from Sweeney Todd, if you know that musical. It is wicked, mean power. And that's how badly the haves wanted to keep what they had and defraud the have-nots. So to finish them all off, they were ready to swoop in. And the people who are trying so desperately to hold on to that string of the kite, even they are starting to lose heart. And they're starting to worship other gods. Baal is a god of those times. And so they're right in that balance. It isn't just with the powerful either that God is upset. So those people that are starting to speak up, And Micah trying to say, hold on. Even God is challenging them and saying, you say hold on, but you have plenty to eat. Because you, as a prophet, are taking care of yourself and you're prophesying peace, but you're taking food out of the mouths of the poor. So really, God is letting the whole kit and caboodle, as we might say, know that things have to change. The image of swords being beaten into plowshares that Matt shared with us last week, that's the kind of image that comes out of Micah 2. Huge shifts are going to happen. So it's going to come. The future's going to get better. Hold on to that string. And where is it going to come from? A little tiny place, it says. Not the big Assyrian army, who they might say, well, one of those rulers is going to turn around and take all their powerful wealth and save us. No, it's going to be something we haven't expected. Maybe something we kind of know. There was a king named David. He also came from a small, unknown place. Yes, it's going to be somewhere from where you least expect it. And that's where we're left. Something will birth out of a place we least expect, a small and tiny town. When we remember good things like that in our own lives, good things that we might expect when we least expected it, and believe that the source of those good things still hasn't died, can we imagine having hope like that as well? Can we just think about that for a minute? Because it makes sense, you see, if those who lived under a tyrannical rule many years later would believe that it would shift again for them. If King David had come from a place and things shifted and now they were bad again, it could happen again, right? So out of holding this story from Micah and out of their living memory of King David, out of their own desire to listen for God, they begin to be expectant that God really wasn't going to desert them, that God would save them again. It had happened before, it would happen again, and it would be a way that looked hopeful, not just for themselves, but for their babies. I mean, forget ourselves. We want a future, right? We want things to still be here for those that we have birthed. Maybe that's also true for some of us sitting here today. What parts of your own story, in your own life, move you to believe that things aren't always going to stay the way they are now? That things are going to get better? You know, we've spent the last 3 weeks moving ever so slowly towards the mystery of Christmas, right? And we've listened to the story of those who have come before us, and we chose to stay with those stories out of the Hebrew scriptures because those people were deeply, deeply hopeful in the midst of great turmoil and persecution. We've considered being thrust into God's refining fire and coming out the other side. We've examined our parched thirst for hope and our overwhelm, the waters that threaten to overtake us at times. And so here today, we look at what it might be to live in a message of hope out of our very own existence. In other words, looking back so we can move forward. For some people, it's just more than you can take. Some people just don't want to hear that kind of a message. My life's always been bad. It's always been this way. It's not going to get better. There's two words in our family we use to describe that kind of a person. You're either an Eeyore, or we call you a grumpasana. Are you having a grumpasana day? Do you need to go back and get up again? Right? And we all know who Eeyore was. Nothing Christopher Robin or Winnie the Pooh said could help Eeyore out of his rainy funk. Because there's times we just don't want to hear words of hope. We just don't want anyone to convince us that things are any better than the crappy way we know they really are. Don't mess with my reality. People who are beaten down know what this is like. People who are holding power and don't want to share it with others actually know what it's like too. It's good. Keep the status quo. Cynical folks understand this, right? It helps our worldview. Those who want to exploit or oppress others also know that any kind of hope, any kind of expectancy is absolutely threatening. Absolutely threatening. It's why in a lot of war-torn countries, they squelch the music. That's why they do it. Because when we're unable to rise towards God's hope, we become despondent. We become hopeless. And that's why Micah had to speak up. because those heavy condemnations were weighing those people down. Have you ever felt resentful or annoyed when someone else insists on taking a positive, expectant attitude towards a situation that you know cannot be fixed? You don't have to say it out loud. I know. When they say, it's not really that bad. Like, yeah, it's really that bad. No, it's not. Look what all that you have. Shut up. It's true. The belief that something has happened that will eventually make things better can give us a hope to hang on to that is not only life-changing for ourselves, but is life-changing for whole civilizations. And that's what Micah knows. So what might that look like for us today? I think it's somewhat fair to say that many people did not enjoy living through their junior high years. 7th grade through 12th, ups and downs, right? Okay, that's true. Hush. Jock. I'm not going to say what my label was. Oh, not good. Nobody's here from Berkeley High, right? Okay, I was a steppy, but you don't know what that means. My mom's in the room, though. Yeah. Those were hard times for a lot of people. Because growing up isn't easy. And part of growing up that makes it difficult is you don't always have the cognitive ability to believe, right? To know. Because what's happening right now is all that you can muster to deal with. Many young people today face really difficult times, tormenting times, and we hear about that in our culture, bullying, and it leads them to feel like they have no hope. They're despondent. And it's true of a lot of us, but it's especially true for our LGBT kids and our teenagers, is who I'm really talking about, who often have to hide the deepest part of themselves, their sexuality, for fear that they will be attacked or bullied. So without any hopeful people around them, especially hopeful gay adults, they have very little to look towards or to hope for. And they can't imagine, this is what we're trying to talk about in Micah, they can't imagine what their future might be like. They can't even imagine. So in many instances, LGBT young people kill themselves. They kill themselves or come close to it. And they do that simply for being who they are and not having someone around them. And while many of them can't see a positive future, we know, we that are older, we know that's not true. And so some years ago, there was a wonderful movement that was started. Maybe you've heard of it. It was called It Gets Better. And all I could think about with that It Gets Better is, that's Micah. I know you guys think things differently, but I think Old Testament Micah. It gets better, right? And the It Gets Better project was created specifically for LGBT people so that they would tap into that hope and the happiness and the potential and the positive places that their lives would reach if they could just get through their teen years. So it's like if they could just see through the slat and know, look, we're here, we're holding this red balloon. It gets better. That community has come together in many ways, and they believe that if we keep working to show young people these things, that it will get better. Well, there's a, we just want to show you a video about it. They can say it much better than me. So let's watch this together. Belief in Jesus is firmly rooted in the prophecies that come from ancient words, many of which we've heard over these last few weeks. That is where it is written that God will bring a Savior to all of God's people. So as we prepare to welcome God in our midst, we're right on the edge. We know that the roots of our past give us hope to believe in a future that can be. And that those roots will become the buds that break through the soil and shoot towards the sun. And that is where God is born. Into our rough world of poverty and human trafficking, of factory fires and horrendous school shootings. That right in the middle of our grief and terror, in our secret places of shame, of who we human beings truly are, Jesus comes to bring God's love and to show us our true colors. I know that our world is full of violence and sadness, but no sooner do terrible things happen than God comes among us to stand with us, to sing with us, to be with us in our brokenness, with healing and with forgiveness.
As we move into this time of prayer, our invitation is to hold and to reflect on where our hope is coming from in this day. Where might we see in our own lives the string of the red kite, and how might we hold on to that so that we're not afraid and we're not overcome? And maybe that's in our own lives, or maybe, as those folks were so beautifully singing, it's in the lives of folks who are around us who find themselves in hurt and brokenness in ways that we can't fathom or understand or make sense of. And maybe our invitation is to fly that kite beside that person. And so our hope is that during this time of prayer that you'll find a way to tap into that hope, to hold on to that string, or to maybe fly that kite for someone around you. And we pray in many ways in our community, and we want to give you some opportunities or some ways to approach this. You can stay right where you are and just close your eyes. Sometimes that's the place that I go during prayer. For some of us, music and song is our deepest prayer, and so we'd invite you, if you're in that place, to sing along and to move into this time and allow the music and the words to be your prayer. For some of us, we need to see it or to touch it right in front of us. And so there's an opportunity over here by the stained glass below here where you can take a candle like our children did earlier in worship and to light that and to place it in the sand as a symbol of the hope that you long to experience, that you hope will be born within you, or a hope that you have for others that you travel with. Some of us just need to breathe as a way of praying. So however and whatever you need in this time, may we wait within all that God is birthing in our lives and in this world as we move together into this time of prayer.